So you've come here for the truth. Well, we've got the truth and nothing but the truth. Here are your hosts, Robert A. Bianchi and David J. Bruno.
Welcome to WMTR Radio. It's nothing but the truth with your hosts, Bob Bianchi and Dave Bruno. It is a show about mindset, not about law, but we do have lawyers and law-related people on the show, Dave, so long as they can talk about something of interest that deals with mindset. And you found one of your colleagues on the, Law and Crime Network. No, it's Court TV that you brought on the show today. Tell us who we got.
Yes, we welcome Claudia King. Claudia King is a former law enforcement officer turned podcast host and nonprofit CEO who uses her own experiences as a survivor and a chronic illness warrior to help others make the most of whatever life has thrown their way. And like Bob said, we've appeared multiple times on the Court TV network commenting on these cases, these domestic violence cases, these child abuse cases, and you always have a great perspective, wisdom to bring to those shows. So I thought you would be a fabulous guest to come on Nothing But the Truth, share your story, and engage in a dialogue with myself and Bob about mindset. Welcome, Claudia.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here, and hopefully I will have some gems that I can share with the audience today.
Great. I mean, now, you started off as a police officer. Just getting into that, how did you get into being a police officer to begin? And then what about the experiences as a police officer that put you into that seat with the wisdom you have today?
Yeah. So when I was little, I always wanted to be a detective. I started to be interested in true crime at the age of 5, which is weird, but I would read true crime books and I always wanted to figure it out. At the time, I did not realize that detectives are police officers. I just thought they were their own little segment of the population. So as I became a little older and understood the world, I realized that I had to become a police officer to be a detective. And I kept making excuses, you know, let me wait till I graduate college. Let me wait till this happens or that happens. And then 9/11 happened. And I realized at that point that it was my time. And so I applied at that point. It took about 6 months to get through the process. And I started the academy in March of 2002. And I saw so much during that time, both good and bad. And what it taught me was that, first off, we can't internalize the things that we see, as difficult as that is, but you will get run down and burned out if you put everything that you see on yourself. And that's why you often see police officers laughing or joking at a horrific crime scene. It's not because they're heartless and thoughtless. It's because they're doing something to replace the thoughts that they could be having about that crime scene and about what has happened with something a little lighter so it doesn't bog them down.
Well, I'm going to jump off of that. As you can see, I have my Superman suit on. So I'm a first responder, and that really struck me. There is that gallows humor. And I'll be honest with you, I recertified as an NREMT in 2024 after a 35-year hiatus. Okay, so I started when I was 17, and I did it for 10 years in college and law school, and I was burned out. There's only so many times that you can see what it is that you see, and so many people that can bleed on you or vomit on you, or, you know, you're just seeing horrific things. You never know what you're responding to. I don't think people really get that. You get a call to go somewhere. You're going sirens, lights and sirens, and you never know what's on the other end of the door, I say. Same thing with a cop. And so I completely can feel, we would have that gallows humor and people would think it was really macabre, but it was a coping mechanism. I'm 35 years older now, and I look at it with a lot more curiosity than I did when I was younger. So I see a much deeper meaning in everything it is that I'm doing now as an EMT, which makes it more exciting and less difficult, stressful. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that's how you have to do it. is to look at it in a more meaningful light and what you're doing and how you're helping people. If you just look at it very surface level, it can get monotonous and it can get difficult to carry those things with you. But if you think about the differences that you're making after you leave that scene, and I was lucky enough to see some of those things down the road and how they turned out, it really makes all the difference in the world. So I really appreciate that you do it that way and you kind of make it a bigger picture than just that moment. And that helps it be more meaningful to you and also a little bit less stressful.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, another thing that strikes me from looking at your bio here is that sometimes the people that are responding and helping need help themselves. You found yourself in that kind of situation. Can you explain that to us?
Yes. So I was dating a police officer at the same department. We had met before I became an officer, and we moved in together, you know, after, I don't know, 6 months or a year, but he was abusive towards me. He was very controlling. He was demeaning. He was financially abusive. He was physically abusive. And, you know, the things I had gone through in my life prior to that are what led me into that type of relationship. And I'm not saying blame the victim, but what I'm saying is if you don't heal yourself, you will continually find yourself in the same situations up against the same monsters that just have different faces and different names. So as I was going through that, I would go to calls for domestic violence and I would be very helpful, I think. But when I would leave, I would be angry at those women. And I would tell people, and this is embarrassing to say, but I would say, you know what? If these women don't leave on the first time and they call back, they should be charged as accessories to the crime. And I realize I was mad at myself. You know, I wasn't mad at them. I didn't feel like they were the problem. I was mad at me because I wasn't ready to do what I needed to do to get out of my own situation. So I would give them the care that I wished I would take. But then I also, after the fact, would give them the anger that I really felt towards myself.
Wow. That's really insightful. It's amazing that you could see that. I think a lot of people do what you just said, not recognizing what it is that they're doing, which is extremely destructive. Wow.
Yeah, I think there's a conversation there about that cycle of domestic violence, right? And we see it as, we saw it as prosecutors, we still see it on the defense side, is that, you know, there's the domestic violence incident, then there's the honeymoon. And it's a reoccurring cycle that keeps people in that spot. I wonder, looking back at those years, because you're no longer a police officer, correct? You've moved on. Looking back at those years, can you speak to the cycle that you think you lived and some of the observations you made of the women on those domestic violence calls?
Absolutely. And I will say there are a few men as well, but they are fewer and far between when men are victims. But there is that cycle. So you have the honeymoon period. So everything's great. The abuser is being very kind, complimenting. Everything's very calm. And then an incident happens that triggers them. And it might not even be an incident between the parties. But let's say the male abuser gets written up at work, for example. Now he feels less than, he's angry, you know, the system has wronged him as he's going to see it. And so what is he going to do? He's going to take that home and take it out on the wife, the girlfriend, the partner. So then you have the abuse. So whether it's physical, sexual, financial, emotional, you'll have generally a period of ramped up abuse that then calms down. So you will go back into the honeymoon of, I'm so sorry, I was just super stressed out at work. You'll also hear, you know, why do you make me do that? If you would just vacuum the carpet the right direction, which is something that I ran into, you know, I wouldn't have to hit you. If you would just fold the clothes properly, I wouldn't have to do this. So it's a honeymoon, but it's still another way that the abusers get their hooks farther in and demean the victim even more, because they got to keep that victim feeling like you can't get out and nobody else is going to want you.
Well, that's amazing. You know, it's something I think that is going to resonate with you, was something that when I was prosecutor, I went to a lecture on domestic violence. And honestly, I went to him like, oh, here I go to another lecture about domestic violence, or here I go to another, you know, drug and alcohol, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But every now and again, you get surprised and somebody gets up on that stage and says something that really wows you, and you have that epiphany moment. And this one was a woman who gave a lecture about that the higher incidence of domestic violence among certain socioeconomic groups, especially high worth individuals, highly educated individuals, and first responders and police officers that live in a darker place because of their reputation, because of their job, because of their public profile, because of the public's perception of them, they're even less likely to report and seek help for domestic violence. Does that make sense to you?
It absolutely makes sense, because for me, you know, I didn't want to report, partly because how can I be a police officer and let this happen to me? You know, how can anyone respect me if I can't even protect myself? So I definitely felt that. And then for, you know, higher net worth individuals, they have such that image that they want to protect, typically, of not only themselves, but their whole family. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, victims still love those people. As horrible as it sounds, they love the abuser. And that's why it does start and continue. So they want to protect that aspect. And even though that individual is a horrible human being, most likely, there's still love for them. And the victim doesn't want to say anything because they don't want to let that out into society.
Wow. All right. That's excellent. Well, 12 minutes went by very quick. We're going to have to take a quick break here at the WMTR Radio Something About the Truth, but we'll be back on the other end. We'll be right back.
At the Bianchi Law Group, our team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys specialize in criminal defense and domestic violence cases. When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.
All right, welcome back to WMTR Radio, Something About the Truth. Claudia King from Strong Enough LLC. Now, I know you had something with the police chief. You may want to talk about that. You may want to talk about Strong Enough LLC. What's your pleasure?
Well, I can talk about what happened with the chief, and that will kind of lead me in if you'd like.
Perfect.
Let's go.
So as a police officer in Colorado, a very small department, and this was about 7 years ago, I was friends with the police chief and didn't see any red flags. You know, he was kind of a weird dude, but like, you know, he was 62 and whatever, seemed normal. So one day he wanted to go drive a route for something with me in the car, and I didn't have a weapon on me. So we drive this route, and at the point where he should go one way to go back to the police station, he goes a different way. And I'm still not freaking out yet, because there's still a way you could get there. But then he drives onto a gravel pathway and says, I'm not taking you into the woods to kill you.
Oh, my God.
Which no normal person says. And so now I'm frightened, and it'll take way more than 12 minutes to tell the whole story, so I won't. But, you know, I will say that we ended up in a very secluded area in the woods. And I am normally a fight or flight person, and something in me let me know that that would not be the right choice. And so I went to fawn and freeze, and I did what I could to placate him and to get out of the situation alive. That was my goal at that moment, is I just have to get out of here alive, which I did, but with PTSD and a lot of other things attached. So that whole situation and trying to heal from that situation led me to create Strong Enough, because as I was healing, I blamed myself. You know, what did I do to make him think this was okay? What did I do that was wrong? And you know, the answer is nothing. I didn't do anything wrong, but I wanted everybody else to realize that too, about their own circumstances. And so Strong Enough is a podcast and a coaching business where the tagline is, you are strong enough and you are worth it. And it's to let people know that whatever they have gone through, they are strong enough and worth coming through to the other side. And however I can help them do that, I want to do.
Well, I mean, I have to ask you. I mean, that's first of all, inspiring that you were able to take a negative thing, turn it into a positive thing to help other people. Awesome. Whatever happened to that chief?
So this is how I learned the real meaning of justice. I did report it. And not only did I report it to the town, I also reported it to the police, not the same department. But CBI came in and investigated. And the investigator, you know, came to me and said, you know, I can't control what they do. It's up to the DA. And the DA was very intertwined with the town, which is a small town. And so all that to say, he was not charged. He was allowed to resign from his position and went to work at REI. But what that showed me, because I could have been really angry, you know, and said, I didn't get my justice, but I did. And the reason is because I did everything I could control. And what happened after I reported it and gave them the evidence that they needed, I can't do any more than that. You know, the rest is up to somebody else. And so that is how I now define justice, is if you do the things that you're in control of, you can't control what happens after that. Mm. So you have to be satisfied with that and proud of yourself for taking those steps.
You know, I used to always say,
the rest is the rest.
Yeah, I always used to say when I used to handle civil rights cases back in the day that the courthouse isn't a place where you'll get justice. It's a place where you'll have a chance at getting justice. And so you do the best you can and then you offer it up. Wow.
Exactly. And you know, I had text messages, geolocation, like there was evidence, you know, a hospital, all that stuff. But you know what? That's okay. It's I did what I could do, and I'm at peace with that.
Oh, yeah. And you're doing great work out there, Claudia, too. I mean, we have the opportunity of appearing on the Court TV network, and we're talking about some crazy cases. And that, those are the cases that get covered, are the ones that are crazy. Domestic violence cases, children being abducted, endangered, killed. It's so unfortunate. But I applaud you, Claudia, because, you know, there's a saying, your mess is your message, and your message that you deliver is one of experience, is wisdom, and there are plenty of people that need to hear this message that you are shouting. So, well done. What about other things in your life? What are you doing when you're not helping out victims and survivors?
I'm helping out other people. Apparently, that's my thing. So I do have a chronic illness that I have lived with since 2005. It's a bladder disease that no one's ever heard of. So I recently took over as CEO of the only nonprofit in the U.S. that supports that disease. It's called Interstitial Cystitis, and the nonprofit is the ICA, or the Interstitial Cystitis Association. So our goal is to advocate for increased research funding because there is no cure. We also support the patient population with education and a community of similar patients that they can connect with. And we help healthcare providers by giving them additional information about the disease so that they can help their patients. And we just try to do all that in a way that's evidence-based. So we're giving out great information that's reliable and it connects with people and hopefully will lead one day to a cure.
Service. You know, once again, it just brings service into my mind, serving others.
I got the weirdest thing that popped into my head when she's talking.
God.
I just started thinking of the saint, Saint Bernadette. Saint Bernadette is a Catholic saint, and she was afflicted. She had visions of Mother Mary, but she was afflicted her whole life with serious illness, and she a lot of pain and a lot of suffering. And yet turned it outward to love and to help other people. You're like a modern day Saint Bernadette. The only thing short of you is you need a cape.
Well, she's also, go ahead.
I can make that happen.
Well, you also caught Dawson's from Dawson's Creek identity theft thief. So how in the world did you do that? Were you a police officer at the time, or you're just avenging all these wrongs?
Get her the cape.
I try not to avenge for the most part. So I was a police officer. I got called to Lowe's hardware store for this irate lady who wanted to make a return, and they would not accept it. And I was one of those people that just like wanted to dig in. And so as I'm talking to this lady, she's telling all these stories. She's got multiple credit cards. Well, one of them is James Vanderbeek. And I'm like, I know who that is. So several hours of investigation with her, she claimed to have dated him. I don't know about that by looking at her, but whatever. But this was in Greensboro, and they shot that show in Wilmington, so just a couple hours away. So in knowing him in some way, she had stolen his identity, had a bunch of credit cards in his name, and was running around buying stuff on the credit card and then trying to return it for cash. So, yeah, it was very exciting. It was fun, and it's just a cool story to tell. It's a great, you know, party story.
And I'm sure you had to call the victim of that, right? Yeah, Mr. James.
We need you to come down here.
Yeah,
I need you to come
pictures.
Down.
You got some pictures. Hey, can we get some signatures?
Yeah, this guy's like, how come this woman keeps calling me? This is the 15th time I had to come and tell this story.
Well, witness prep. You had to do witness prep, right?
Right. Like, it's got to be perfect for court. You guys know this.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, how's Buster been?
Buster is fantastic. He is the cutest little guy. You would think that too if he was right here in front of you. He is almost two. He is a Pekingese, and he loves life. He knows the names of his toys. He's super smart. He's learning Italian. And yeah, he'll probably do some service later as well as he grows up.
Oh, man. How old is Buster?
He's almost two. His birthday is the day after Christmas, and he'll be 2 years old.
Wow, awesome.
Amazing. Not many people strong enough. How did you start the podcast? Because a lot of people want to start one, but they never actually take the action. How did you?
So I was on another podcast for Domestic Violence Awareness Month in 2021, I believe. And that was the first time that I had ever publicly spoken about my own situation as being a victim and becoming a survivor of domestic violence. So I kept in touch with the producer of that show and the host. And one day he texted me and said, what would be the perfect podcast for you? And I said, well, as a listener, as a host, like, what do you mean? And he said, no, if you were doing a podcast. And so I said, you know, I'd want to do it about domestic violence, but that's really niche. So I'd really rather do it about any type of challenge or trauma that somebody's had and talk about not really the issue, but how they got through it, what brought them through it, because that's what people need to hear. And he said, cool, let's do it. And so he said, you know, I've got your editor, I'll distribute it for you, like, let's rock and roll. And so I said, well, now I have to rock and roll. And so I started with my arm in a cast from just having wrist surgery. And now I'm almost 115 episodes in.
Wow. That's with a amazing background that rivals ours as well.
I know.
You guys can't see it right now on radio. However, this is recorded via video, and we will be dropping the video into YouTube on the Wednesday, as well as the podcast episode.
Yeah, I can't stop looking at it. It's like I don't even know how to describe it. like a box. She's like in a box. It's really cool.
It's kind of like ours in the sense that we have the triangles and the depth and the dimensions behind us. But yours is really, it's like, I had to ask. I was like, is that flat? Is that a cubby?
Yeah, because it's like got depth to it. It's so
it's cool. Fascinating.
Yeah, it's cool.
It really is.
Like, that is high praise, so I will take it all day long.
You bet.
All right, listen, we've got to end this party. We're going to have you come back, though. We loved having you.
I would love to come back, and thank you so much for having me and giving me a chance to chat with your listeners.
Of course. Thank you. All right. WMTR Radio is Nothing But the Truth. Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno, every Saturday at 9:30 on the Radio Dave Podcast.
Nothing But the Truth Podcast. We're recording, we're airing on Saturdays, but we also have the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, and the video that we just referenced. We're taking video on all of our guests and all of our shows. NothingButTheTruthPodcast.com is the place where you can find all the videos and all of the podcast links. Claudia, it is always a pleasure. On the Court TV Network, now on Nothing But the Truth. Thank you for sharing your mess, because your mess is your mess.
Oh my God, we're going to be hearing this now. I have a funny feeling, Claudia, we're going to be hearing that a lot. Peace.
You're stuck with it.
It's not new.
Be careful
out
there.
It's not new. It's just applicable to Claudia. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
We're the Bianchi Law Group, a team of prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys.
But here's the thing. He put himself in a box when he said my
relied on
dead.
By CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, Law and Crime, and news leaders across the country for our criminal defense expertise.
In a search warrant, you have to have probable cause that a crime's been committed and there's evidence in a particular place.
When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.